Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome. I'm Kelly Richards, CEO of the All Access Group and the host of All Access Radio. I've spent over two decades creating innovative alliances in the digital media industry and driving the convergence of music, entertainment, and technology between major content companies, technology companies, and established musicians and celebrities. Tonight's guest on the show is Peter Hoppenfeld. Peter is widely recognized as the go-to attorney and advisor in the representation of direct marketers, speakers, authors, information marketers, thought leaders, entrepreneurs, and domestic and international training companies in all aspects of their legal and business affairs. Peter is a seasoned transactional commercial attorney with direct marketing, distribution, and franchising, licensing, marketing, branding, and operational expertise. On a daily basis, Peter helps all these experts create effective marketing, merchandising, and expansion strategies. His mission is to rapidly, wisely, and strategically grow people's businesses, reach, and revenues. Peter has been described as a lawyer who understands marketing and a marketer who happens to be a lawyer. Welcome to the show, Peter. Thank you so much for sharing time with us this evening.
Thanks, Kelly. Thank you very much. You're going to inflate my ego. Thank you.
It's great to have you. My own lawyer, by the way, Jeffrey Brandstetter in San Francisco, is like your doppelganger because he's the unlawyer. You know, he's a lawyer, but he's also a superior strategist and business person.
Well, you know, the strategy has to come first, and my job is not to get in the way of deals but to make them.
Yep.
So, you know, I want to make sure that, you know, clients' risk tolerances are appreciated, and I know what their end game is and what they want to accomplish. And I want to get them there and not get in the way of it. But if it's something that doesn't make sense, I'm going to be pretty vocal about it. But we talk strategy first. And then the lawyering is not that hard.
Yeah.
So I kind of, you know, we put our egos away, except when I really feel like a client's just, you know, grasping for a shiny, bright object without a good reason.
Understood, and I feel the same way. It's been my experience, too. So, Peter, let's jump in the Wayback Machine for starters. Maybe you could share with our listeners what got you into the legal profession and how you carved out such a unique niche. I mean, your work as an advisor and strategist is a pretty innovative way to apply your knowledge and your expertise. So how did you move from being just an attorney, which is obviously a big deal in its own right, you know, to becoming an advisor and strategist to some of the biggest stars in the internet marketing world?
You know, I like to say, or I really believe, that you reinvent yourself every 10 years or so. So here I am 30 years in practice, and there have been those threshold moments where you kind of you see the fork in the road, and as Yogi Berra said, you take it. So there were opportunities along the years that kind of got me where I am. You know, some of it was fortuitous, and some of it was pure luck, and some of it was just kind of grasping at the brass ring. So about 20 years ago, a lot of what I did was in franchising and setting up franchise systems, franchise companies, in their expansion. And it was really the first wave of very large law firms disappearing and contracting. And as a boutique practitioner, I realized that the market was shrinking for me, and I had to do something different, or the 80-20 rule was going to kill me.
Yeah.
So, you know, I was actually reviewing a company's distribution program, and it was a motivational speaker and a direct marketer. I knew nothing about that side of the world, and I quickly learned, and all of a sudden I learned about, just because it was an opportunity, I became really immersed in live events at time and direct mail and TV and infomercial and radio. This was in the early 1990s. And then I was introduced to who a guy who at the time was the personal finance guru in the industry. It was a guy named Charles Givens.
Right.
Who at the time was – Charles Givens was – yeah.
I do know who Charles Givens is. I used to buy his books.
Absolutely. He was the Today Show personal finance expert. He had an infomercial. He had live events. He had a travel club. He had a real estate division, entrepreneurship. He had best-selling books, and he also had a very large ego.
Yeah.
But for a young attorney at the time, it was the ultimate laboratory. I was outside counsel, and I was involved in all these different things, and I learned a whole lot and immersed myself and over the years, you know, really learned about the underbelly of direct marketing. Not in a bad way, but it's an unknown, you know, multi-billion-dollar way of doing business. Direct.
Well, and of course, back then, and I haven't heard the name Charles Givens in 20 years, I have to tell you. And didn't he go bankrupt and then rebuilt his whole
yes.
life?
Well, he lied about his life, and that was the problem.
Yeah.
His life story was that he made and lost $1 million 3 times.
Right.
And that he wrote the song Hang On Sloopy, if you remember Hang On Sloopy.
Yes.
And he was involved in some litigation that he should have settled over. Somebody said it took his advice and canceled a life insurance policy. It was a tragic story. And instead of settling the case, his ego got in the way, and he was deposed, and they said, prove it. And he couldn't prove his life story.
Mm.
And Jane Bryan Quinn at the time wrote a column, an article in Time magazine, and it was the downfall of Charles Givens. And shortly, within 2 years, he was bankrupt.
I don't know if he needed a lawyer or a publicist more at that point.
Well, he needed to get out of his own way. He needed to tell the truth.
Yeah.
But what's actually very interesting, Kelly, is here we are 20-plus years later, and his mailing list is still very active.
Is that so?
There are still subscribers to the Charles Givens. Pretty remarkable. So anyway, so that was my entree into the direct marketing world. And then I kind of went with it and saw opportunities and helped build a very large seminar company in the real estate space. And as I saw that market shrinking, a lot of this was pre-internet. And then
all pre-internet.
The internet came. Right. And then as the internet emerged, I started adding more tools to my tool belt.
And so
realized.
Were you also involved in like the Carlton Sheets, no money down type thing?
Well, similar ilk. There were whole lot of those going on.
Yeah.
So I was involved in a lot of that, a lot of those strategies. And then as the internet started exploding, I knew I needed to add tools to my tool belt. And I was I worked with a company in the gift industry in New York and was learning more about sales and saw the initial entree in the dot-com boom of the sale of products online because nobody thought you could sell content at the time. This was the late 90s.
Right.
And then as things progressed, I was having breakfast one day trying to put a deal together with a guy who I never even heard of. And we were at the Parker Meridian Hotel, and I was working out the parameters of a deal. I didn't quite know who he was, and it was Harv Eker.
Ah.
And Harv looked, and I was just doing what I do and trying to make a deal between two parties. And during a break, Harv leaned across the table, and he said to me, I wish I had a lawyer like you. And 2 weeks later, I was his attorney. I've represented Peak Potentials for the last almost 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And that became, you know, the next fork in the road that I took, which, you know, introduced me to the power of a book in a funnel and really, you know, the first use of a free book to drive people to events.
Right.
And the growth of internet marketing and email sequencing. And then that led to a lot of really well-known internet marketers, leaders in the field like Orion Lee and Chris Farrell and Alex Mendozian, who became clients. And each step along the way, you know, I added tools to my tool belt, but also learned that's what's old is new again. So a lot of the strategies that, you know, my clients were using 25 years ago were just re-emerging with a different technology.
Yeah.
So,
absolutely.
That's kind of where, you know, that's where we are. And I also learned to put my ego aside and to say, to realize the importance of strategy and the importance of at least a semblance of a plan of how you want to move from point A to point B and then do the lawyering. Okay?
And I would agree with you. And I'm guessing that you would agree that not everybody can do everything in a so-called funnel. They're not going to want – some people don't want to speak. Some people don't want to publish. So just because there's 20 things in a marketing wheel, spokes on a wheel that you could choose to do as a professional, you're not going to do them all, and you're not going to do them all well. So
and
how do you –
You probably shouldn't. You know, I'll give you an example. And, you know, the expression, you don't kill the goose that laid the golden egg, right?
Right.
What I have found, and I think you'll probably agree, when you find really successful companies, and in this market, I represent internet marketers who are making $1 million a month.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in the scope of the Fortune 100, that's nothing. But in small business, in a virtual reality with no overhead, that's a lot of money.
That's a lot of money.
Mm-hmm. That's a lot of money. And what I have found from client to client is they have found their niche market, and they have found their niche talent in converting sales. Okay?
Yeah.
And they're very different. And when you start to force feed a method into a company that's already successful, you can kill the goose.
Exactly right. And so play to your strengths is what I'm hearing on that one.
I'm sorry?
A play to your strengths is what I'm hearing you say on that note.
Absolutely. But also the other piece of the puzzle is, so, you know, it's always like a feeding frenzy. The person who's the next great converter, right? Everybody wants a copy. Wow, so-and-so created a video sales letter that converts, so everybody could copycat.
Right.
And everybody who's successful all of a sudden becomes a target. Gee, I want to be a partner of yours. I want to join venture with you. I want to publish your book. I want to do this. I want to create a TV show. I want to do this. Bah, 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 bah. I want to invest in you. Well, you have to be careful that those deals don't also kill the goose inadvertently. For example, I have a client. They're probably one of the hottest exercise six-pack ab programs on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? 2.5-3 years ago, this was a credit card and a dream. Okay?
Yep.
And their niche marketing approach that laid the golden egg was a unique use of YouTube. Okay? Pure video play.
Uh-huh.
They were approached a year ago by a very large movie production company that wanted to do a home video, and it's a name, I can't really mention the name of it. Name brand. They do in-theater movies, but they also do home video.
Right.
They wanted to do a series of videos of the namesake of this company. There's one particular personality. And they handed us the contract. And if my client had signed the contract as it was, this studio would have owned everything, every ability of that company to sell via video.
Wow.
Which would have killed their business.
Yep.
And so we pushed back and said, we really don't need you. We don't – think about it. I have an internet marketer, okay, from 3 years ago, who's looking at a major Hollywood movie studio production company saying, we don't need you.
Yes.
The money you're paying us to film isn't worth it. We make that in an hour. And we don't believe we're ever going to make any money from you because your formulas of royalties are ridiculous. So if you really want us, we need, you know, we need X, Y, and Z, and W to protect our business. And guess
exactly
what?
Exactly right.
And guess what the movie company did? They punted. They said, okay.
Well, that's amazing. I would have said the opposite, because on the music side of things, you know, I'm a little bit more, fluent on the music side. We see, for example, an artist like Psy coming out of Korea and leveraging YouTube to the hilt and making millions off the advertising revenues from YouTube, not needing a record label deal.
Correct.
And that's
what
a parallel.
So if a label wants
to sign him, then his lawyer is going to be in the same position you are, in an advantageous position to demand certain things, and the label may or may not play.
Well, the problem you have, Kelly, as you probably know, the contracts and paperwork that the music companies use and that book publishers use are 40 years old, 50
yes.
years old.
Yes.
I just did a major book contract for a client and with a big, big publishing house, and they still use the word telex in it.
Oh, my God.
When was the last time? I mean, I date myself. I remember telexes.
I do too, but I haven't heard that term in probably 30 years.
Right. And I pointed it out to the person. I said, do you realize that your terms and conditions have the word telex in it? And they said, it does? So they haven't even read their own stuff.
It's a template.
So
you're right.
It also doesn't apply. It doesn't apply.
Yeah.
If you are an author, the
flip side of those agreements is equally egregious. When they want everything on the internet, social media, in perpetuity, in all formats across the universe.
That's right. And let alone, you know, and they don't know what to do with it.
No. So it's crazy.
Like
but obviously you are a necessary resource to any content creator, notwithstanding your expertise in this area of internet marketing. But everybody needs a good lawyer, because otherwise what we're talking about can happen, just it does happen every day of the week to people that are just unsuspecting.
That's true. It's very true. It's unfortunate, and, you know, people sometimes get caught up in the wave of a successful push.
Right.
You know, I also, I like to say, you know, everybody talks about these amazing launches, okay? A launch is a new concept. It used to be you built a sustainable business.
Right.
Now I have clients come to me, I just had a massive launch, and I ask them more questions, and they don't have a bank account.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
Right? So I say to them, if you want me to help you, you have to change your mindset from going from launch to launch to building something sustainable.
Absolutely.
It's remarkable. Some of the most successful names in direct marketing, I'm not just saying internet marketing, when you go behind the curtain, they sometimes time their launch because they've run out of money.
Yeah.
It's shocking.
Once again, we see this in the startup world out here in Silicon Valley. The distinction between entrepreneurs who really seek to build a business that's sustainable, that's going to grow and last and add value, versus the ones who just want to flip their companies and be on to the next thing.
That's true. And also, as you probably know, outside of very small and unique situations, it's the thought that you're going to have an exit strategy a la Silicon Valley or Silicon Alley on the East Coast is fantasy land.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah.
So
it's the same comparison, whether you're an internet marketer, a content creator, or a startup entrepreneur, you know, whatever happened to sustainability and really being in it for all the right reasons and for the long run to add value, you know?
Right, and to build a strong foundation that you can then leverage in any way it takes off.
Exactly
from,
right.
You know, building it, from scaling it tenfold to 100 to, you know, deciding that it's an employee-based, you know, company that's going to have heart and it's going to incubate and it's going to grow, to deciding to have a nonprofit element to it. All those things require some foundation.
And this leads me to my next question or discussion point, Peter, which is something else I think we probably share in common. I believe that when anybody's creating a body of work or a piece of content, that they should think of themselves as a brand, and that whatever that piece is, it's one piece, one spoke on a wheel. So when somebody's an author, why are they not planning the next suite of products where the book is the tip of the spear, and then you've got the funnel, as you say, where they can springboard off that book to create a compelling series of offers and products and build an audience? I find it fascinating that, you know, whether you are an artist, a songwriter, you know, filmmaker, or an author, people don't often think like that automatically in a cross-platform way. And so there's this evangelism required that you do and I do, and it's important.
Well, you have to do it. I speak at an event twice a year called Author 101.
Right.
And aspiring authors show up, and I say to them over and over again, it's the message of the week of those weekends. And you know it in the internet side and in the music side. It's not just a book. Number one, you can't make money with a book. Number two, you can't get published if you don't have a platform, if you don't have a following, if you don't have an audience, if you haven't proven in advance that people are watching you, listening to you, hearing you, and liking you.
Right.
And that's whether you're a writer, whether you're doing video, whether you're doing music, whether you're a performer. Whether you're a trainer or you're a motivational speaker, you need to show you have an audience. You have to develop that audience. You have to create community. It's a completely different game now than it was 2 years ago, 5 years ago, 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And unless you have that multi-pronged platform, it's all vanity. It's a hobby.
Yeah, and it's a one-trick pony thing that's just going to fizzle.
It's of course. Let alone, you know, because the dollars in traditional media are so limited, let alone the creativity is so not even close to what's going on in the street. You're not going to attract any attention.
And it comes back to branding again, that people need
to
see themselves as a brand with substance and a platform and a message and continuity.
And integrity.
Yeah.
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 And being genuine. I mean, this, if you are a jerk, the world will know it in about 2 hours.
Yeah, no kidding.
Right?
That's the power of social media.
It's the power of social media, and it's you know, and people will see through it. And if people don't like you, they'll be vocal about it. So, you know, you have, if you're going to build it, it's not, you know, and there are a lot of my clients are personality driven. Those are even scarier.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Or what's even scarier than all of that is a brand that is developed without a little bit of homework to make sure you even own your name.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
Right?
Let alone your domain name, but any your personal name.
Your domain. Well, even beyond you, do you have the domain? The name, the catchphrase, the trademark? I mean, do you
own
it?
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. The worst thing that happened, you had that great launch, and then you get a letter in the mail, and someone says, change your name, I own it, or pay me X dollars. And you go, whoa, whoa, whoa. All it would have taken was a little bit of homework.
And how about that horror story some years back of J.J. Virgin, who was on the Dr. Phil show, and millions of people watched her, and she didn't have a website. Nowhere to send them.
Full disclosure, J.J. is a client of mine now, and luckily, but because of that experience and a lot of great advice, and she's a very smart lady and a lot of success, she's probably the most artful user of Infusionsoft-type programming to launch
mm-hmm.
her business in
mm-hmm.
the industry. But
yeah.
you learn the hard way. And Kelly, I have to tell you, I didn't have my website up till 6 months ago. So sometimes life gets in the way. But
yeah.
you're right. But you know, there are horror stories of companies that have launched, have huge name recognition, and all of a sudden they realize they don't own their name.
Yeah, it's a serious problem. And again, I think that's a basic. That's a basic. We're having a conversation.
It's a basic, but right. It is.
We're
but,
having a conversation here about whatever you are, whatever your expertise is, whatever your chosen tools of getting the word out and making money from your brand and your expertise, you've got to think like a business person. You've got to have people around you who are smart about the marketing, the legal side, the common sense business basics if you're not going to be responsible for that yourself. And you've got to be thinking like a multi-platform orientation, because that's where you're going to make your money, that's where you're going to build a reputation, and that's where you're going to have longevity.
It's all about not putting the cart before the horse.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I don't know about you, but I'm not a strong believer in huge, massive business plans. They don't work for me.
No. Mm-hmm.
But I am an advocate for people to understand, you know, where they are and where they want to be. What's point A? Where do you think you want to be in a year? Okay. What are you comfortable doing? You know, what is the end game? You know, what is ultimately your brand about? And what are you comfortable doing and what are you not comfortable doing?
Yes. And
right?
not trying to do it all at once. Moving a couple
Absolutely.
Things forward a mile versus 100 things forward an inch.
Correct. And it's like being on a trip. It's being on the moving walkway in the airport. You know, it gets really uncomfortable when it starts going too fast, right?
Exactly.
You have to know when to rein it back. Sometimes
That's right.
I like to say sometimes the best deals you make are the deals you don't make.
Yeah, very wise. Well, now there's a saying that good artists borrow and great artists steal. So, Peter,
I
would love to have you tell us a bit about the fine line that you see that exists legally between using other people's content as inspiration and being liable for plagiarism. Is it as simple as attribution?
Well, it's not. And it's, you know, in this day and age with internet marketers being able to launch content so rapidly, it's become a real epidemic. And I think I get regular calls from clients who say, somebody just stole my entire platform.
Yeah.
Somebody just totally stole my landing page. Somebody
I've heard
stole
these
my
stories.
Emails. Somebody bought my course, my information marketing information course, and they're now reselling it.
Right.
And they've done nothing but change an introduction. I, you know, flattery and imitation nonsense. I challenge people to understand what they want, they've learned, and to make it their own. You know, it's just too easy right now, but it's uncalled for. You know, and people, there are sharks out there. It's remarkable. Look, if you're writing a book and we're talking about the basics and you're quoting somebody, quote them. Give them,
in other words, provide
give them credit where credit. Yeah, right. Give credit where credit is due.
Yeah.
But I'll give you an example. Client come to me. Some of my days are just spent looking at people's offers. So I'll look at a URL, and it's his landing page. And it's a video sales letter. And the video starts, and it's this down-home voice, and there's this kind of cartoony-like drawing going on. And it says, in the next 12 minutes, we're going to talk about such and such and such and such. Well, it's not 12 minutes. It's really 22 minutes.
Uh-oh.
And you can't stop it. And there's no stop button until around 18 minutes in, and then there's a buy now button, and they all follow the same format.
I've seen this.
They all look the same. And when
yep.
I say to my client, well, why did you do it this way? Well, because so-and-so did it. I say, well, convert it. I say, well, if you go to so-and-so and you say, well, why did you do it this way? Because so-and-so did it, and because so-and-so did it. So I challenge my client, do something differently.
Yes.
The most successful marketing campaigns were the ones that thought outside the box and changed it up. Okay? And if there's ever a time where it's easier to change it up than just copy, it's right now.
Well, and quite frankly, it's important to be original and stand out. That's the only
right.
way you're going to be seen as a thought leader. And again, it's not just what you could get. It's not a one hit, one quick hit and move on and go live on an island. You're there to build
right.
a brand and longevity, and you've got to do that with
right.
authenticity and originality.
Absolutely.
We're saying the same thing, but it's amazing to me how many people just don't get it at the most basic level. And so there's opportunities for people if they really just pay attention.
To the point where many of my clients are moving away from providing digital downloads of their content.
Right.
Because it's just fair game for copycats.
Or others are doing the exact opposite, Peter. They're giving it away for free.
Right, right.
Because then they're going to be seen as giving something of value, and they can use that to upsell through the funnel.
Well, and honestly, Kelly, that the whole idea of free and the whole general philosophy of internet marketing funnel, it's really, I've theorized, the result of the credit crash of 5-6 years ago,
mm-hmm.
and it created a whole industry. Because back
mm-hmm.
in the day, the way if everything's reversed. Back in the day, an infomercial or direct mail piece, pre-internet, would drive people to an event where you would try to sell as big a ticket item as you could, and use up and sell as much as you could to your audience until they couldn't afford you. When the credit world collapsed, forget about the real estate crisis. Credit was tight.
Right.
The internet marketers came about at the same time, and they looked at the world and said, let me give you value for free. Let me earn your trust. I'm not in a hurry. I'm not running away, okay? And when you love me, I will sell you something for like $69.
Mm-hmm.
And if you still love me, then my top 5% will love me forever, and I will support them, and I'll make more money, okay? It became a real change in philosophy. Now, I'm kind of linking it to the fact that money was tight.
Right.
But it also became the awakening of the understanding of the concept of niche. So, as you remember, dot-com boom, nobody was talking about selling content. Right? It was never about content. It
Mm-mm.
was all about product.
That's
because
right.
Why would anybody want to buy content? Well, in the last 8 years, content became king because of the power, as a result of Facebook giving you demographic targeting and LinkedIn and social media being able to target your audience so, discreetly and distinctly, you now could create a product based upon niche, hit that demographic niche in a very fine-tuned surgical way for a very little bit amount of money, and when you have a product niche matching with a marketing niche that converts, what happens? You have huge success.
Well, and frankly, that hits another trend spot, Peter, that was going on 5-6 years ago, which was that massive unemployment happened. And so
right.
people left voluntarily or otherwise corporate positions, took their expertise with them, and decided to, spread the gospel. And that's like
right.
what Ben Burchard's Millionaire Messenger is all about, right, where people became
sure.
experts in niche markets.
Correct. But it's even I'll tell you, even beyond the expert industry, even in the niche product business, that's the niche information product business is huge. And, you know, and it's all about a particular piece of information and understanding who your buyer is.
Right.
And the power right now of driving internet traffic to that distinct demographic is just massively unbelievable.
Well,
so
you might be anticipating my next question, which was going to be, what do you think is trending right now along these lines?
All right. Well, you know, as always, health, well, it's January. So right now, everybody who's listening, check you're on Facebook, LinkedIn, whatever, check your feeds for advertising. You're going to see a lot of self-help, a lot of personal development, a lot of health, a lot of six-pack abs because it's New Year's resolution time.
Right.
So that's seasonal. I see the continuation of niche marketing being very hot in a very targeted way, but I see ancillary education to the next wave, the second tier of education. People have already kind of gotten their first dose of education and moving to the next level. Let's take, for example, I'm going to be people for many years have said to me, you should have the product. And I, you know, oh, you should be the LegalZoom for direct marketers. And I said, that's not what I do. Okay, I'm not a cookie cutter.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not interested. So what should I do? And I realized, that many of the marketers who come to me have no business sense. They have no entrepreneurial skills. They didn't go to school. There's no real trainers for the marketing, the people who hit semblance of success as marketers. So I'm going to be targeting that market.
Got it.
And offering a training on how to be an entrepreneur, how to be a business person, how to evaluate, how to ask the questions. You know, people, how do you hire? How do you fire? How do you open a bank account? Okay. What kind of experts do you need around you? What are the questions to ask to evaluate a deal? How do you avoid the bright, shiny object? How do you set your own pace? How do you think like a business person? And those are all things I think that aren't being addressed in the general marketplace. I tend to disagree that you can teach yourself to be an expert.
Yeah.
Okay. I think that's really semi-misplaced and false and gives people false expectations.
Yep.
It's not that easy. You know, saying anybody could be an expert is just another version of a get-rich-quick, no offense to the dozens and dozens and dozens of thought leaders who are taking that approach. I strongly disagree with it. But I do think there are basic skill sets that are being taught both on how to be a marketer and the tools that are out there. But I think the business school skill side needs to be added. I'm going to certainly be trying this.
No, I think that makes perfect sense, Peter, and I think it is needed. I know of just a couple of other people that are gearing in that general direction, one of whom you may know, Gary Goldstein.
Gary's a partner, former partner of mine, a really good friend, yeah.
There you go. So you know what he's up to along those
Absolutely.
Lines. And then Tim Draper, one of the most successful venture capitalists out here, has started Draper University. And its aim is to educate entrepreneurs specifically to be more savvy about all the kind of things you rattled off from a startup mentality. So there are people that are just starting to put those pieces together, and not surprisingly, one of them was a former partner and collaborator of yours.
Absolutely.
But it's great stuff. My last question for you, Peter, for our time together tonight was going to be, what comes next for you? What's the one project or collaboration that you haven't yet started that you dream about creating as part of your legacy? But I dare say you just answered that, unless there's something else.
I really think I did. But, you know, the kind of the interesting part of where my practice is at right now and the kind of network I've developed and the kind of the grapevine that kind of comes across my desk is that I never quite know what's coming tomorrow. So I'm grateful, you know, after all these years to have that kind of flow of ideas. So every day is a little bit of a new challenge. So, you know, what the future brings, and I kind of think I've kind of learned through the years to, you know, when I see the fork in the road, I take it.
Yeah. You know, I've noticed this as well. And not too long ago, I might add with some humility, is that every day or at least a few times a week, somebody just pops into my inbox or my voicemail that just comes out of nowhere. and it's an opportunity I never could have expected. They just start showing up like poppies. And
yeah,
I've just learned to go with it, because that's what happens when you've been in business for a long time. People just reach out.
I don't know about you, but I tend to challenge, you know, people call me and they say, I have an idea, or someone has an idea, what do you think? And I really give it a lot of thought. So I'll challenge. It's not always about that turning that phone call into a client. It's like testing the person to make sure they really have thought through it. Is it really have you really give it serious thought, or was it just an idea you had over cocktails? You know?
Yeah, exactly right. But then, of course, managing your own time and sussing out pretty quickly with your own filters whether there is an opportunity, because, you know, we don't have anything if we don't protect our time. So
correct. No, absolutely. But I think you and I, you know, you reach a point where you can probably with two or three questions get a sense of whether something's real or not.
Exactly right.
And how it sits in your gut.
That's right.
You know.
Because fit is as important as anything else. There's got to be a fit.
A fit and also a sense of passion by the creator.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So,
you know,
Peter, I've really enjoyed our time together, and I want to thank you again for making the time to join us tonight.
Oh, thank you. My pleasure. Thank you.
And I hope we get a chance to meet at some point when I'm on the East Coast. So I wish you a good evening, and I want to thank our listeners, as always, for joining us. We'll hear you all again on the next edition of All Access Radio. Good night, everybody.